We are holding on Tess Zion on the base 13 lines from the bottom.
The mission said in Burning Hollow that you're not allowed to build certain kinds of structures together with the Goyim because, as we said, they use them for judging people, either for judging Jews in capital cases, or even that they use it only for judging Goyim, but it's still lifnei iver because they're doing it in a way that's not allowed off the halacha. One of the things the mission mentioned that you're not allowed to build with them is a basilica, which we said is something like a palace or
basilica.
In English, it would be a basilica, yeah.
Saying there are three kinds of basilki
that it's possible to be building. You have ones of Goyish kings that they use for judging, like we talked about in the Mishnah. Then you have ones that are basilki that's built as a structure for a bathhouse. And you have a third kind that are built as a treasury. The first kind is like a kingly basilica where they would judge people,
where
the kings or the governors or what have you would judge people and condemn them. You have the kind for bathhouses, and you have the kind that are used for storehouses, for treasuries.
So why do we?
So which one that we're not? I'm a Rava Beis Lahatcher V'Achal Beiser. So therefore, Rava says, okay, of these three kinds, two of them you're allowed to build, provided that you don't build the part where they put statues, as we said in the Mishnah.
Now,
one of them is Osir. Which one is the one that's Osir? The Simen, the way to remember which of these three is Osir, as the Pasuk says, Wester Malchayim Bezikim. Literally it means, as we say every day in Davening, to arrest, to chain up their kings with chains, with fetters. But Bezikim means chains, fetters, whatever, like handcuffs, whatever it means, yeah. But the point is, by having the word lesser, which also means hoser, as in forbidden,
and malchehem together in the pasuk, that helps us remember what kind of basilki are you not allowed to build, the kind that's used by malachim, the kind that's used by kings for judgment and for judging and executing condemned criminals.
But not the other kind, the kind that are a bathhouse or the kind that are used for a treasury you're allowed to build. Yeah.
On the other hand, the Ikadamri, Omar Rava Kolom Lahatir. A different version is that no, Rava says all three of them you're allowed to build
together with the guy. So then the question is, what do you mean? Vatsnan ain't burning in mind Basilki Gaudum Itzidio Bima. We said in the Mishnah that there's certain structures that you're not allowed to build with them, and the first one on the list was Basilki. So therefore there is a certain the first version of Rava works out very well.
The Mishnah is talking about one kind of Basilki.
The price in Rabbi Baba Chana is Rabbi Yechanan is spelling out there are two other kinds that are mutter. But according to the second version that Rabbi is saying all of them are mutter, then what is the Mishnah answering? The answer is you're a
stonemason, you're an architect, you're whatever. Yeah.
The answer is a mashal garden b'shal itzidi b'shal bim. You would say, according to the second version, what the Mishnah means, that you can't build a basilki with them, means the kind of basilki that goes together with a gaudon,
that goes together with a scaffold on which they would judge and execute criminals,
a shalit stadia, or basilki associated with an stadia where they have a stadium, where they would have bullfights, etc. Vishel bima.
But a basilki by itself, the kind that's used in the king's palace, that you're allowed to build. The fact that it's used as a king's palace, that it's used as a king's residence, that in and of itself doesn't make it also.
We don't feel that later on they're going to add, I guess.
Whatever, yeah, because that would be later on. But right now, when you're building it, it's just as a king's palace, so that it's not associated with anything that's used for judging, so only the kind that are associated with something of judging would be also.
And that's according to the second version, that's what the Mishnah means. Since we mentioned a gaudum, since we mentioned this plaque,
capital punishment is also in Jewish law. Why?
Of course, but the difference is, in our law, we have strict rules about it. We have strict rules of evidence. We have all the different rules that we talked about in Sanhedrin, that you can't have a person incriminate themselves, and you need to aid him,
so
and you have hakiro drisha, etc. They don't, so that's the thing. So that's what we discussed yesterday. They don't. They don't have necessarily such hard and fast rules. They kind of make things up as they go along. And besides which, also, we discussed yesterday what the Meiri says, that even we say dina demachot to dina, that doesn't apply to dini nefashos. That applies at most to dini mominus, and even within that itself, not necessarily to all dini mominus. So if they have, if they're judging according to the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, that's different, of course. Then we learned in Sanhedrin that a goy who's over on one of the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach is Chayav Nisa, and they have the obligation to have courts that enforce these laws, the elected that enforce these laws and judge them and execute them as needed. But here we're talking about where it's not. Right.
It's that they don't have.
Right. So that's the thing. So therefore, either you're talking about, therefore, that a Jew is going to end up getting executed by them, where it's not necessarily that they did a fair trial, etc. Or, again, what the Ritva says, that even we're not worried about them executing Jews, but even the very fact that they're going to be executing their fellow Goyim is also usur for them. It would be considered murder for them, unless they have strict procedures for it, which they don't. They make things up as they go along, and they don't have strict rules of evidence, and so forth. So substantial evidence they accept, self-incrimination they accept, etc. Okay, so since we mentioned a gaudum, since we mentioned in the Mishnah a gaud, and we just mentioned now a gaudum, the platform where they would judge people, where they would judge capital cases, so now the Gemara is going to bring a story involving somebody who was being judged on a gaudum. Turn it up on. Shenitfas Rabbi Eliezer leminus. When Rabbi Eliezer was arrested for minus. Now what does that mean? Rashi understands that it means that minim, meaning either it means outright Ovdei Avodah Zarah, or it means sometimes, in many cases, minim means the early Christians, as we talked about before. So Rashi understands that it means they arrested him to try and force him to worship their Avodah Zarah. According to Rashi, the minim themselves, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, or the Christians, and Rashi just says l'kofer l'avodas kachavim, that they arrested him to force him to worship Avodah Zarah. In which case, it would be Pashtus, it would be Romans, yeah, or somebody who had that kind of power. Some other Rishonim learn that actually what it means is that he was arrested on suspicion of minus, that he was arrested by the Romans on suspicion that he had something to do with the minim. Again, the minimum over here would be the early Christians who weren't at that point in history they weren't yet considered anything protected. By they were still considered some kind of upstart new religion that the Romans didn't tolerate. Yeah, so they suspected him of that. Okay, many of them did. Yeah, that's, yeah. Okay. So anyway, so Rabbi Eliezer was arrested for minus. Again, either according to Rashi, he was arrested to try and force him into minus, into Avodah Zarah, or according to the other explanation, he was arrested on suspicion of minus. Allahu la gaudim lidin. So they brought him up to the gaudim, to the platform, to judge him. Amalai oisa hegmon. So the hegmon, the governor who was judging the case, says to him, Zokin shekabos payasik v'dvarim v'telem alalu. Should an old man like you be involved with these worthless matters? Now, what does he mean by worthless matters? If we mean, according to Rashi's explanation, that he was arrested by the minim, who were trying to force him to worship Avodah Zarah, then what the judge is saying is, why are you bothering with your Torah? And he's calling it a foolish thing, a unnecessary matters. According to Rashi's explanation, you would have to say he's referring to the Torah. That's the judge is arguing. The Torah is Dvarim B'Telem, it's worthless matters. Why are you bothering with that when you could be coming over to our side, to the Avodah Zarah side? According to the other explanation, which among others Rabban Hananel says an interesting explanation. It says an interesting line over here. He says that they said on him that he admits that there are shtei reshuyos. That there are two powers in the world. And some of the Achronim talk about that maybe what Rabbeinu Hananel meant to say actually is they claimed that he believed in three, which of course we know the Christians have their Trinity. So according to that explanation, then the hegemon who's judging the case is telling him, why are you getting involved with that kind of narishkeit when I know that you Jews believe only in one Hashem? What are you getting involved with this narishkeit of two or three gods? What who believes? What, the hegemon? The hegemon himself? We don't know. The hegemon, no, according to this, that, no, if I care, according to this, the hegemon might have been one of the pagan Romans who worship a million gods. Yeah. So he's saying, okay, we have our ancient religion, fine. You have your ancient religion with one god, fine. What are you getting involved with this new narishkeit that the Christians came up with two or three or however many it is? That's the thing, according to that explanation, according to Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation, that's what I mean. Okay, in Roman courts, they didn't necessarily need evidence. But wait, that's not the point of the story. Amalai neman olai hadayim. So Rabbi Eliezer answers, I trust the judge. Now, which judge does he mean? Kesavar oisa hegman olavu oimer. So the governor thought that Rabbi Eliezer is referring to him. That, in other words, he's agreeing with what the judge is saying. according to either of the explanations. Really, Rabbi Eliezer was referring to the judge in Shemayim, Hashem, saying that I trust that the true judge, Hashem, is doing the right thing. However, the goy misunderstood that to think it means that Rabbi Eliezer agrees with him. Amaloy, and he says to him, Hoy over here, manti olecha, since you admitted that what I said is correct, that you admitted that I'm a fair judge and you accept what I say, dimus potra. Dimus, you are exempt, you can go free. What is dimus? Rashi says dimus is the name of this judge's idol. So he's swearing in the name of his idol, dimus, that you can go free. Tosfos brings an explanation that dimus means mercy, means pardon. And then Tosis brings from a Yerushalmi where it has that meaning. So therefore it means dimus potter after a pardon, you're potter, you're free to go. He's swearing by the mercy of his idol. So not like Rashi says that dimus is the actual name of the idol, but rather he's saying I'm having mercy on you. And again, Steinsaltz says that maybe the word dimus, according to this, might be related to the word dismiss. Okay, anyway. When Rabbi Eliezer got home safely after this, his Talmidim came to comfort him over what he had to go through. But he wasn't accepting what they were saying. He felt bad about what happened to him. So according to Rashi's explanation, why did it have to happen to me that they're arresting me and trying to force me to worship Avodah Zarah? According to Rabbi Hananel, how could it be that they suspected me of being a min? There must be something, the dakos that I did, that's like minus. What could it possibly be? I saw another explanation also, which is Rabbi Eliezer was upset about. According to Rashi, that dimus is the name of the guy's getchka. It comes out, but because of Rabbi Eliezer, this guy ended up swearing in the name of his getchka. And we learned before that's a serious matter. Sort of, he didn't mean he didn't directly cause it to happen, of course. But a tzaddik holds himself to a higher standard. So why did it have to happen this way? Okay, but then why did Hashem make it happen? What did I do? What did I do wrong that this needed to happen? So Rabbi Akiva, his Talmud, tells him, Rebbe, Tarsheni loymel afanecha davar echad mimashe limantani. Would you give me permission to tell you over, to repeat to you one thing that you previously taught me? Yeah. Omaloy emmer. So Rabbi Eliezer says, yeah, go ahead. Is it possible that maybe one time you heard a statement from a min and you enjoyed it, you liked that verse that you heard, and maybe therefore you ended up getting arrested by these very same minim, means you were arrested. So therefore, either, again, you were arrested in the end by these very same minim, or you were arrested by the government on the suspicion of being associated with these minim, maybe because of that, maybe because one time you heard a nice vote from them and you liked it. Amaloy, Rabbi Eliezer says, yes, Akiva his kartani. Akiva, yes, you reminded me, actually, that's exactly what happened. Ham acha toisi mahal. One time I was walking in the upper market of the city of Tzipori. Umatsafi echad, I met up with one person, and an it was Talmidei Yeshua HaNotzri. It was a Talmud of Yoshka. Not Rashi. In uncensored Gemara, it says that. In all Gemara, it just says a Motsasi Echad. In uncensored Gemara, it says a Motsasi Echad mit Talmidei Yeshua HaNotzri. The Yaakov Ishkvar Schanya Shmoy, and his name was Yaakov Ishkvar Schanya. Amali. So he says to me, listen, now it says in your Torah that you're not allowed to use the something that was used to hire a zoina for relations, you're not allowed to use it as a korban. We'll learn about the details of it tomorrow. We talked about it briefly in Baba Kama. But the main place we'll talk about it is in tomorrow. We'll learn in about a year and a half, that's a shame, we'll get to it. So it says in your Torah that, for example, so let's say you have a man wants to hire a zoina for znus, and he gives her, let's say, a sheep as her wage, as her fee. That sheep is now also to bring as a korban. So he says, this Yaakov Ishkvar Schanya says, ma'olafes imena beis akisa l'kohen gadol. What about, would you be allowed to use the proceeds from this esnan zoina to make a bathroom for the kohen gadol? Why does the Kohen Gadol need a bathroom? Because for a week before Yom Kippur, he spends, the week before Yom Kippur, he spends in the Lushkas Parhedrin, a chamber set aside for him in the Bais Mikdash. During that time, of necessity, he has to go to the... No, he prepares for Yom Kippur. He practices the Avodah, because not necessarily during the year does he do the Avodah. The Gemara discusses at the beginning of Yuma the exact reasons behind it. Is part of it is in order to make sure he's not Tomei. Part of it is similar to the way Moshe Rabbeinu had to be secluded for a few days before Matan Torah, as it discusses at the end of Parashas Mishpatim. It's a whole story over there about the exact reasons behind it. But be that as it may, during that week he has to spend the whole week on in the Harabayis. He's not in that room the whole day. I mean, during the day he's practicing Avodah. But basically, he needs to stay. His place to stay is in this Lushkas Parhedrin. He doesn't go home during that week. So of necessity, he needs a bathroom. So therefore, would you be allowed to take Esnan Zayna and use it to make a bathroom for him over there?
What about the other people that are normally there during the day?
They can leave and go to the bathroom and return. As a matter of fact, actually, the Mishnah tells us in the Sefer Talmud that there was actually, you had a underground below the Lushkas Beis HaMoked, you had a chamber in the Beis Mikdash. We had a fire burning all the time for the Kohanim to warm themselves by, whatever. There was a staircase from one of the in one of the corners of it that went down to an underground bathroom. And therefore, if a Kohen needed to do that, then he would do that. But to go to the bathroom, then that's what he would use. But here, I guess, the point was that he needed something specially for the Kohen Gadol, because the point is he's not supposed to be mingling with the other Kohanim. So therefore, part of the idea is in order to make sure he doesn't become Tomei. Tosfos points out the question may not be whether it's allowed Midar Raisa. The question might be is it a proper thing to do? The lawyer Mautilikum, and continues Rebbe Eliezer, so when he said this, I didn't say anything to him. However, Omali, then this Yaakovish Kvarskhania continues, and he says, you know what? Actually, Kachlim Dani, this is what my teacher, and again, Yeshua HaNoitzri, in Uncensored Gemara, it says, that my Rebbe, so to speak, Yoshka, taught me as follows, that yes, you have another Pasuk, you have a Pasuk in Micha, that says, Ki me esnan zoyna ki botza vad esnan zoyna yeshuvu, from the hire of a zona it collected. In context, the pasuk is talking about the city of Shomer and the capital of that Seret HaShevatim. They got a lot of money from various illegal kinds of pursuits and whatever. So they gathered the whole wealth from Znus, both of the literal type and of a desara. But Esnan Zona Yeshuvu, eventually it will return to be the hire of a zona. In other words, in context, what the pasuk means is all these ill-gotten gains of the Aseret HaShevatim are all going to end up getting taken away from them and given to the goyim who conquer them. So here, which is what happened in the end, of course, because Asher conquered them and took away all their treasures. But Yaakovish Krausachania is saying, this is what I learned from Yoshka, is, yes, mi mokam atinopis bo'ul, mokam atinopis yalechu. So this money came from a filthy place. It should go back to a filthy place. So therefore, it would be appropriate to use such money from an Esnan Zona to use it to make a bathroom for the Kohen Gadol. This is what he said. And Rabbi Eliezer says, when he's telling over now the story years later, v'hin ani hadover. So I enjoyed it. I thought to myself, yes, this is a good verse. What was so good about it? So Bapashta is just that, yeah, now you have an answer. But I saw actually an interesting idea where somebody argues that it wasn't just a question of how do you explain Psukim. It actually referred to something that was going on in the Roman Empire at that time. The Roman Emperor Aspasianus, the one who started the siege that led to the Korban, afterwards he was emperor for a few years. At one point during his reign, he imposed a tax on the public bathrooms in Rome in order to raise money for various public works projects and whatever. The Roman historians write about it. As a matter of fact, in some European countries, they call a public toilet, they call it a Vespasian or something like that, after him, after Vespasian. Anyway, what? In France, in Italy, yeah. So therefore, that's, I saw an article by somebody who argues that maybe the conversation over here was actually, on the surface, they're talking about the Psukim and they're talking about the Beis HaMikdash, but under that, they were talking about this Roman law about taxing bathhouses, about taxing bathrooms, and therefore, Rabbi Eliezer enjoyed that, yeah, you know, the guy has a good point. Look at this, you know, the Romans are getting their money from filth, and it's going to filth. So, yeah. Anyway. However, However, yeah, as a matter of fact, now I realize that's why I ended up getting arrested by the minim. Because I was over on what it says in the Torah, where the Pasuk said, the whole Pasuk goes, we have it on the side over here in Torah Rosh Hashanah Gimel, keep your way far away from it. So don't come near to the door of its house. And those are referring to two different things. Keep your path away from it. That refers to minus. Don't have anything to do with minus at all. And when it says don't come near to the door of her house, this refers to the roshut, the government. Because Rashi says the government is very rapacious. If you have money, then they pay too much attention to you, and they end up trumping up causes against you, and taking away all your money. So therefore, stay away from that. Or the ikadamri, or a different version of how to explain the pasuk. Halchak me'alei darkecha zu minus v'ha roshus. That the first half of the pasuk is referring to both minus and the government. And the second half, don't come close to the door of her house, refers literally to a zoina. Stay away from her, house. The kama, so how far away do you need to stay? You have to stay at least 4 amas away. And that's takad halacha, that both as far as a place of avodah zarah and as far as a place of znus, you have to stay away from them.
Arba'amis is nothing.
Arba'amis is, well, in those times when you had narrow sidewalks or whatever, it was significant. But the point is that you stay away from it.
We need the Torah doesn't tell you other places stay away from, they say.
Not explicitly. No, not in so many words. So that's why this whole thing had to happen to me, because I heard this word from Yaakov Ishkvar Sachanya and I enjoyed it rather than rejecting it since it came from a mean.
But here we're talking about Arba'amis, which is a physical boundary, and his case was about a...
Okay, it's about
something else.
Right.
Physical.
Okay, but the point still remains that we see that you're supposed to stay, that you're supposed to physically stay far away from Avodah Zarah and from Znus, and he said here, and he realizes I didn't do that. There is an interesting thing, by the way, the Arizal brings, that Rabbi Eliezer was actually a Gilgul of Reuven. Now we know that you had the Asorah Harugi Malchus, which... Okay, so I'll tell you. So we're going to have later on, we're going to talk about the Asorah Harugi Malchus. We'll talk about Rav Hanani ben Tradin in particular. We know that they were Gilgul of the Ten Shvatim, and we know from the Piyutim that we say on Yom Kippur and the Kinnis on Tisha B'Av about how the whole thing was because of their sale of Yosef. Now what happened? We know Reuven was sort of involved, but sort of not. He wasn't there when they agreed to sell him, but he had Yosef thrown into the pit, intending to come back later and save him. So therefore, by rights, there should have been somebody corresponding to him who should have been killed as one of our Asorah Rogim Malchus. However, since in the end, he wasn't involved in the plot to kill Yosef, therefore, the person who was his Gilgal was only going to get arrested, but not actually executed. That was Rebbe Eliezer, said the Arizal, and that's why he had to go through this.
You see the fact that you remember one thing that he did wrong. In other words, it
shows that everything else he did was right.
Perfect.
Indeed. Yeah. By the way, this that we're saying, by the way, as far as keeping away from Avodah Zarah and keeping away from Minus, it has many implications in halacha besides the obvious thing that we're talking about, for example, staying away from the door of such a place. For example, you have Rav Moshe Feinstein talks in a couple of his Tshuvos about the question of, for example, He talks of it in one of his Tshuvos. He talks about a case of a school that needed a place, that needed a gym for the school for the kids, and they found the basement or whatever of a local church had a gym available, and he says it's not allowed based on this Gemara. You want to teach the kids, and especially kids, you want to teach them to stay away from such places. In another one of his Tshuvos, he talks about holding events in a conservative shul. And he says, same problem, because it's a form of minus. He says, it's one thing if it's an Orthodox shul that, let's say, for example, doesn't have a proper mechitza, or they use a microphone or whatever. Okay, at least they agree that there is halacha is binding. They're lax about it. Okay, that's not minus. But conservative or reform, which actually says flat out that certain halachas don't apply, that is minus. And therefore, yes, because it's
which ones?
Different things. I mean, for example, they say that the halachas of driving on Shabbos, let's say, don't apply. Or whatever. So, based on whatever logic, whatever twisted logic they use. The point still remains, and therefore that's considered minimum, says Rav Moshe, and therefore it would be awful. Okay, fine. So now we have to ask like this. Fine. We said what Yaakov Ishkar Chania said on this pasuk, Kime Esnan Zoyna, and we said that Rav Eliezer was saying I should never have accepted such a thing. Well, what do the Chachamim or Chachamim? What do they explain this pasuk as referring to? The answer is Kedur of Chista. They explain the pasuk.
Why do they have a different explanation?
Well, since we're saying that the explanation that Yaakov Ishkar Chania gave is an explanation of Minim, and therefore we should reject it,
it means there has to be some other explanation.
The answer is Kedur of Chista. The Chachamim explain it the way Rav Chista explained it. The Amar of Chista. The pasuk teaches us, called Zoyna Shiniskeres Levasopi Secheres. Any Zoyna who originally people hire her, people pay her for Znus, in the end, she becomes so degraded in everybody's eyes that she, and she's still so desperate for this kind of thing, that she will go and hire other people to do it with her. So therefore, Me'esnan Zoyna Kibotza, she gathered together a lot of money from Esnan that people gave to her, and now in the end, she ends up paying it out to other people in order for them to be attracted to her, that Esnan Zoyna Yoshu. So it ends up that it returns to being Esnan that she has to give to them. Well, not just Averga or Savera, but the point is that you see that how degraded such a lifestyle leads her to.
One of the few things that's never satisfied.
This is also true, yeah. Okay. Shenema, as the pasuk said, you have a pasuk in Yechezkel that expresses the same idea. Over Sitech Esnan, the pasuk said that it's part of a long marshal where Yechezkel is talking about the Jewish people, about the averus that they did, about how they were unfaithful to Hashem. He says, over Sitech Esnan, when you have been paying out to people to be mezana with you, meaning, for example, to foreign governments to make peace treaties with you, the Esnan lo nitamloch, and no Esnan was being given to you because no.
Are you referring to something specific?
Yeah, Yechezkel is talking about over there how, for example, how the Jewish people made various peace treaties with the local goyim around them, expecting that these goyim will help them and protect them, and therefore it also led to learning from their ways as far as avodah zarah and immorality and whatnot. So he's comparing the Jewish people in that sense to like a Zoyna who's so desperate that she will pay other people to be with her, to be attracted to her. The Esnan lo nitam loch, and no Esnan is being given to you, but to Hila Hebech, and so it became backwards. She's going in for free, and yet not only for free, but she's going and paying other people where you would normally expect that a Zoyna collects fees for it. Okay. So that's what the pasuk means again by the Esnan Zoyna Kibonza, the pasuk that we quoted before. Now, this that we said, that you have to stay away from the door of a Zoyna for Amos, Upliga de Rapidos. This disagrees with what Rapidos says. The Amr Rapidos, Osra Torah, Elekriva Shogili Arias Bovan. Because Rapidos says, when the Torah says you're not allowed to come close to Arias, it only means the kind of coming close that actually means that will lead to Gili Arias, hugging, kissing, physical contact, whatever. Nothing about staying away X number of amos from them. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ish isha kol she'er b'sara le'sikru v'legalas erva. As the pasuk says, each person to his close relatives don't come close to uncover erva, implying that the kind of coming close that's also is only the type that could lead to gili arayis. Not the kind, for example, just walking within four amos of their door. Or doing business with them, or whatever. Now, so Tosfos discusses over here. Even it's not that Rav Pedos is saying that the Chachamim don't have the right to make further gzeiros on it. Tosfos explains all the Gemara is saying is this that we're trying to learn from the pasuk Al Tikra Al Pesach Besa that we see that we have a pasuk implying that you have to stay four amos away from the door of a Zoyna. Rav Pedos would argue with that and say that's not what the pasuk means at all. So fine, the Chachamim can make a gzeira, fine, but you can't use this pasuk as an asmakta. This that you want to say, that from this pasuk you learn such a thing, no. From the pasuk, all you learn is that al tikrav means not to come close in the way the Torah says, physical contact. Okay. More on this topic about physical contact with people who are an erva to a person. Ula, ki ava osmi devav, when Ula would come home from the yeshiva, havam nashik lula achsei abeyadayu, he would kiss his sister's on their Beyadai, who Rashi translates that means on their arms, And some of them are kosher. Explain, actually, maybe it means on their sleeve or on their gloves or whatever. Well, it was weight. Others say that he would. Others say that he would kiss them on the chest. Or again, abe chadayu may mean, as some of the mafreshim say, it means like on the hem of their like on the corner of their blouse or their dress or whatever, above the chest. Married sisters. Well, it doesn't say whether they're married or not. Although Rashi says when you kiss somebody who's older or greater than you, you don't kiss them on the cheek or whatever. You kiss them on some other part of the body. It's a matter of covered. So therefore, in other words, these were older sisters of his, and he's doing it out of covering. However, Upliga Didea Didei, however, this that Ula did argues with what he himself said elsewhere, Ga'oma Ula, because Ula himself says in a different context, Kriva Ba'alma Osir, any kind of physical contact or any kind of close contact between relatives is Osir, Mishum, because of the expression, Leich Leich Amrinan Nizira, we tell the Nazir, go away from a vineyard. Around, don't come close to the vineyard, because you may forget and can take some grape seed. And the same way, you're responsible to stay away from anything that might lead you to hear her, that might lead you to Aveda. So how is he himself doing it? Says, and the Chelk of Mechoikik brings this in Shulchan Aruch, that he was on a different level. He was on a higher level where these kinds of things didn't cause him hearers. Tosus, Gemara and Ksubas, that mentions about one of Amiroyim who used to take the kala at a wedding on his shoulders and dance around with her, and he said the same thing. It's Kik Shura. To me, it's like a beam. It doesn't cause him any hear her. So when Ula is saying that nobody else should do it, he means normal people. He himself was on a different level. On the other hand, the Rambam actually seems to have a slightly different gears over here. The second part, apparently, the Rambam didn't have a gears of bechadayu that he kissed them on or anywhere near their chest. He just says that he did two different versions, that he kissed them abeyadayu on their sleeve or on yadayu on their actual hand. But even so, he says what it is Ula later on changed his mind and realized, you know what, I've been doing this all this time. I've covered for them, but the fact of the matter is now I realize it's also, and he stopped doing it, says the Rambam. But Ben Yoyada points out an interesting idea. He says in his times in Baghdad, so 100-odd years ago, the minhag used to be that where after a girl gets married, then her family, her parents or brothers, whatever, would come over and kiss her on the chest to represent. She would kiss them on the chest, maybe what it was, I forget, to represent the idea like we're still in each other's hearts, even though I'm living elsewhere. So therefore, he says that might have been the same kind of thing like Ula is doing. He's away in yeshiva for so long, but yeah. Okay. The bottom line halacha in Shulchan Aruch is indeed, so the Rambam says whenever a person hugs or kisses or whatever relatives who a normal person is not attracted to, for example his sisters, he says that the Rambam says about it, it's a thing that tipshim do, it's a davar maguna, et cetera, because after all it could lead to hear her. The only thing that is allowed, he says, is the only kind of hugging and kissing that's allowed is between parents and children.
Depending
on age, you have the Rambam goes on to say halachas about how long they're allowed to see each other undressed or whatever. No, as far as hugging and kissing, even when the children are older, is not necessarily in Shulchan Aruch. I think it talks about that. I think it says in Shulchan Aruch that the parents and children is allowed regardless of age. But I don't remember. I think so, but I don't want to say for sure. Actually, there's Gemara in Kedushin that bears on that, so maybe not. But certainly before they're married, even when they're grown up, if they're not married, then yes. On the other hand, brothers and sisters, no, you're not allowed. They're not allowed to hug and kiss. Akronim say maybe they can shake hands. Between sisters and between brothers, obviously, that's different. But a brother and a sister are taka not allowed to hug or kiss. They're allowed to shake hands. They're allowed to touch each other, but not more than that. Going back to, we talked before about minus and rishus. We talked about minus, the heresy, and we talked about rishus, the government. So now a little more about that. And by the way, the Maharal points out there's a certain similarity between them, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now. They're always looking for more. So in that case, therefore, like they have a certain similarity between them. They're like the ultimate lackingness in the world. Can be described as minus spiritually and the government and the government in the Gashmistic world. So therefore we put them together. Okay.
The Pasuk in Mishlei describes La'aluka shkei bones have. The aluka literally means a leech that sucks blood. But it refers, so the aluka has two daughters, have, give. So Tosfos points out, the pshat is that aluka means Gehenna. And in fact, that's what we're going to say. That's both the explanations that we're going to give over here refer to Gehenim, but one says that Aluka is two things that end up in Gehenim, and the other one says it's Gehenim itself.
So it's Gehenim itself, why do you call it Aluka?
Because it's like a leech that leeches off, that sucks the blood out of a person the same way. Gehenim sucks out the evil from a person and cleans him up so he's ready for Gan Eden. You know, they used to use them. Nowadays, they use leeches to suck out the bad blood or diseased blood or whatever. So, yeah. Okay. So, what my have, what does this expression mean, give? It means it refers to the voice of the two daughters that cry out from Gehenim. And in this world, they're constantly saying, give. So in other words, eventually they end up in Gehenna. But while they're here on Earth, they're saying, give. And they are minus, which is always looking for fresh victims, for fresh people to indoctrinate with their ideas. And rashus, which again, like Rashi said before, is rapacious and always looking for people to give them money.
What does that mean, give? Give what?
Give money, give neshamas to be attracted to our ideas.
Contribute,
yeah. Somebody talks about, when you get down to it, there came a point, I think in the Siv it is, talks about that, you know, there came, of course, a point in history for hundreds of years where you had Minus was the Russia, where Christianity is the ruling religion, and their priests and bishops and whatnot became very rich. So in that case, then you had Minus and Russia literally
together.
Doing the same thing together, yeah, working hand in glove, yeah.
They were forcing people, yeah. To support their lifestyle.
Ikadamri, Omer of Chista Malach. For another version is that of Chista says the name of Malach, but that the Aluka is Kil Gehenim Se'ekas Ve'emeres. It means that the Aluka refers to Gehenim itself, which screams out and says, "Havio li shtei bonos, bring me the two daughters." Se'ekas Ve'emeres Ve'olam Azeh Havei. That in this world are constantly crying out, "Give." Again, namely Minus and Rashus. That the Aluka is saying, the Aluka itself, Gehenim itself, is saying about those two daughters, I want them. I want them to eventually end up in me.
So either
it's the two daughters themselves are crying out in this world, give, and they wind up eventually, they wind up eventually in Gehenim, screaming from pain in Gehenim, or that it's Gehenim itself is screaming, give me those two things, give me the minim and give me the minus and give me the roshos, which are both of which are so rapacious in this world. True, but that's true. The Sitra Achra has been talking about that in Tanya these days. On the other hand, yes, but that's true of the Sitra Achra itself. On the other hand, the practitioners, people who follow it, do. They that's why the Alta Rebbe is talking about these days in Tanya, that a person who does Avedos is in a way worse than the Sitra Achra, because the Sitra Achra itself, the spiritual force that Hashem created in the world, doesn't really want a person to sin. It's just tempting him into it. Where the person who actually follows it. Fuck, what do you mean?
He's in a bad position to say he doesn't want people to sin when he himself pushes them in any possible.
So the Alter Rebbe talks about in a couple of places in Tanya, the famous marshal of the Zoyna in the Zohar, where a king wants to test the moral fiber of his son, and so you have a Zoyna try to entice him. The Zoyna herself doesn't really want the son to give in to her, but she has to trip up, but she has to put on the best possible show. And the son is expected to have the strength to withstand her. So the Zoyner in that marshal is like the Yetzirah. But the point is, yeah, the Alter Rebbe discusses the idea that a person who ends up following the Yetzirah in that sense is worse off than the Yetzirah itself, because the Yetzirah, the Klippus, whatever, don't really want to disobey Hashem, where the person does. Yeah.
In the case of Yosef, what was the reason they actually say so much? Yosef and so much.
So one idea, it says in Sfarim, you're talking about with the wise Potiphar.
Yeah.
So one idea, it says in Sfarim, is when Yosef passed that test, that gave that now the Jewish people in the future, throughout all the years in Mitzrayim, had the strength to withstand the Mitzrayim. And we know that.
Why did it?
That's not why he did it. He did it. You know, he was in that situation. Hashem put him into a cage.
Why did Hashem put him?
That's what I'm saying. One explanation is that Hashem wanted that this way, when Yosef passes it, he will be able to bequeath to the rest of the Jewish people the ability to withstand in 210 years in Mitzrayim and be able to withstand the immorality of the country. All right. We said in the okay. You have another pasuk in Mishle that goes like this: Kol va'eha lo yishuvun, all those who come to it will not return. V'lo yasigu orchus chayim, and they will not reach the paths of life. So we have to ask v'chimei'achav shalei shavu heichin yasigu. Well, of course, if they can't return, if they're goners, then of course they're not going to reach the paths of life. What is the second half of the pasuk adding? Hachikamar. So the answer is, what the pasuk means is like this: the im yashuvu. We're talking about people who are involved in something, which throughout Mishle, you have many psukim that refer to the danger of the isha zara. This pasuk is one of them, and Rashi consistently isha zara literally means a strange woman. In other words, on the face of it, it's talking about a woman who would entice somebody into znus. Yeah. However, Rashi consistently explains throughout Mishle that it's talking about apikorsis, minus, which is what we're dealing with in the Gemara over here. So therefore, the point is, im yashuvu, so all those who come into it, who come into minus, are not going to return, are not going to be able to do tshuva very easily. The im yashuvu, but if they do manage to return to do tshuva, lo yasigu orchus chayim, they will not reach the paths of life in the sense, in other words, they will die soon afterwards. Now, why should that be? So many different mepharshim talk about a lot of different reasons. Rashi explains over here because getting involved with minus has a very powerful influence on a person's thought. If afterwards the person manages to disentangle himself of it, then he has such a sorrow to be able to have to constantly keep his yetzahara under control. So therefore, gzeirat melech, Rashi says, therefore, it's gzeirat min hashamayim, that people don't live very long after that. Because the sire that they have to go through, the sire they have to go through in controlling their yetzahara from then on, it wears them out, basically. And there's different other explanations. Marsha says an idea that actually it's a chesed of Hashem. A person who was involved in minus is very likely to return to it eventually. Even they get tshuva, it's very hard for a person to completely disentangle themselves from it. Therefore, the Eidusha does them a chesed and makes it that they pass away shortly after that. That way they won't have the opportunity to return to it.
Also.
No, so that's the thing. It's very hard to do tshuva for it. Even if a person manages to do tshuva for it, then we're saying that he won't live very long. And in fact, the Rambam writes that the Rambam writes. He talked about this a while back. That somebody a min, we don't accept him as a baal tshuva. Hashem himself knows the truth. If Hashem knows that if this person does real sincere tshuva, then Hashem knows that, and fine, I'll have a place in Olam Haba. We can't accept him because we never know whether he really sincerely means it or whether he's putting on an act. Because minus is so hard for a person to get out of.
Like a sex offender, they always come back and do.
In a way, we're going to talk about that soon. Now that you mention it, as far as the yetzahara, because no, forget. Wait, you were talking about minus right now. The chachamim were mivatul the yetzahara for avodah zara, but we're talking about minus. We're not talking about full fledged avodah zara. We're talking about beliefs that are against Torah. Christianity, for example, even if you don't consider it a Zara, definitely minus, the idea of believing in a Trinity or whatever. Islam may or may not be minus. It's not a Zara. Again, according to the Ran it is, according to everybody else it's not. Maybe it is minus though. It could very well be minus because for example, it includes ideas that the Torah that we have is Islam includes ideas such as that the Torah that we have is incorrect, that it was corrupted or whatever, and of course the idea that their guy, that the Meshuggah is a Navi, and that his Nebuah supersedes that of Moshe Rabbeinu, et cetera, all that, and all those are various forms of apikorsis and minus, yeah. Sure. And the Rambam distinguishes, actually, there's minus and there's apikorsis, there's kfira, there's slightly different terminology.
Different from kfira and minus.
So the Rambam describes over there, basically, you have the 13 ikrim of faith that the Rambam formulated, and then he puts them under different categories, denying some of them makes a person a min, denying others of them makes a person an apikorsis, denying others of them makes a person a kofir, yeah.
Everybody struggles with these things. People can have resentments about Hashem and this and or problem and belief. Everybody's struggling.
Fine, but the minus, we're talking about where a person actually accepts these other ideas. Let's say, for example, so you have one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim is, let's say, for example, that there's only one Hashem. There's not two or more.
Okay,
so we're not talking about a person who questions. We're not talking about a person who can't. I can't understand why Hashem would do this, and I'm angry at Hashem or whatever.
Okay.
We're talking about a person who starts believing that there's two or three or Trinity or whatever. Yeah, it's very hard. Anyway, there's a lot of other reasons. There's a lot of other reasons. The Maharal gives a sort of Kabbalistic reason, which also kind of dovetails with something that it says in Tanya, which is this person has removed themselves from having their chayas from kedusha anymore. They're getting their chayas through truma. That's what therefore they were into minus. Now, if they disentangle themselves and manage to get out of minus, where are they getting their chayas from anymore? They cut themselves off from Hashem. They now cut themselves off lahavdil from truma, so there's nothing left.
They're not doing tshuva at that point.
Even we said they do tshuva, but that's the point. You know, that they managed to do tshuva, but still, it's not enough to get them back to get them back the ability to live. And then there's other explanations. Also, another explanation is that
if someone who does minus is basically condemned.
Well, not condemned. Again, the Rambam says he can do tshuva, and Hashem will know that he did the truth, and then give him a place in Olam Haba. But he's not going to live long in this world. Yeah, that's what we're saying.
Does he have an Olam Haba?
If he does tshuva, yeah. If he does tshuva, yeah. Okay, so the question is, lememra b'chola purish mimi. Okay, so one other explanation is also, as a practical thing, a person who was involved in minos means, so he's obviously not keeping Torah and mitzvahs anymore. He got into all kinds of taivas of this world. Now it's like trying to free a person, it's like a person trying to free themselves of a physical addiction. It's very, very hard. A person may not survive the attack. Okay, so the question is, lememra b'chola purish mimi minos mayis. So are you telling me that a person who manages to separate themselves from minus is going to die? But don't you have the case of a certain woman who came to the chista to find out how to do tshuva? But Omrele, and she says to him, you should know, among the Averis I did, Kalash of a Kalash, the most minor among the minor Averis that I did, is Ostab Nahakatim in Nagadol, that I produced my younger son from my older son. In other words, she was Nizana with her older son and had a baby who's now her younger son. And she's saying that's the least of the Averis. Kalash of a Kalash, the least of the least. Now then, so when Rechista hears that, he turns to the people around him and says, get busy preparing provisions for her, meaning tachrichim, because she's not going to have long to live. V'loy mesa, and in the end, though, she didn't die. And now what's the question? Midika omra kalash of a kalas asa. If she's saying that this avera of znus with her older son is the least of the averas that she did, evidently, miklal de minus nami habiba, obviously, she must have been guilty of minus as well, and yet we see that she didn't die, so therefore she did tshuva, because that's what she came to the chista for, and we see she didn't die, so we see a person is able to do tshuva from minus and still survive. Okay. The answer is, Ahud Delay Hadra Bar Shapir. Okay, well, she didn't do a full-fledged tshuva, or Mishamachi, like Mesa, that's why she didn't die. Again, according to we said for all the various reasons that she said, if you do a full-fledged tshuva, a real 100% tshuva, then for sure they're not going to be able to survive it for all the various reasons that we talked about before. She didn't. It wasn't 100% tshuva, and therefore she could still go on living.
She wasn't worthy of dying.
She wasn't worthy, right.
In other words, at that point, you could have gone back to the other problems, the other things that
yeah.
she saw.
Ikadamri, another...
It also confirms the point you were mentioning, which is you don't trust them because they can always come back.
There is that also. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Ikadamri, another version of the argument is as follows. Minus ein me'aveir aloi. That, according to the first version, the question is, you see that this woman was involved with minus by implication, and yet she didn't die. The second way of looking at the question is, are you telling me that only if a person separates themselves from minus, then they're going to die shortly afterwards? But from avera, from znus, not, a person can manage to do tshuva for znus and be able to live afterwards. Mm-hmm. But you have the case of this woman who came to the chista, and Rav Chista tells the people around and prepare tachrichim for her, umesa, and according to the second version, she actually did die. But now the question becomes, Mikal the Kalash of a Kalash, she said that Znus with her son was the least of the Averis that she did. Mikal the Minus Nami Hadiba. So this is the answer. So the question is, so the question is that you see that she was guilty of Znus and she died trying to do tshuva for it. So therefore you see that's not just Minus, it's also Znus. But like you were saying, sort of like what you were saying before about sex offenders, once they do, it's very hard for them to change. So The answer is no. No, but we have to analyze what she said. If she said that Znus with her son was the least of what she did, also is what she did, that shows that she must have also been guilty of Minus. And therefore, so the reason she died is because she was doing tshuva, a sincere tshuva for Minus. And so that still establishes what we said before, that a person does tshuva for Minus, they're not going to survive. A sincere tshuva, it's going to be so hard on them that they're not going to survive. They're going to pass away, right?
But
the point is, not necessarily would we say the same thing applies to Avera of Znus. A person was addicted, a person was involved with Avera of Znus, they may well be able to do tshuva and be able to survive that. Okay, so now the question is, Ume Avera Loi, so are you telling me that the same thing does not apply to a person doing tshuva from Znus? V'hatanya, but we learn in a braisa, and here's the famous story, Omru Olava Rabbi Loza ben Dudaya, they said about Rabbi Loza ben Dudaya, and why we're calling him Reb, we'll see why we're calling him Rebbe.
So far we're saying
that only Minus, that Minus is unique among Averas, in that if a person was involved with it, it had such an effect on him that afterwards, him doing tshuva, he's not going to be able to live long after. Because of the various reasons we talked about. So are you telling me the same is not true of Znus? I will show you an example of somebody who was heavily involved in Znus and did tshuva and passed away during tshuva. So we see the same thing applies to Znus. So the story is, Omru Olava Rabbi Loza ben Dudaya, they said about Rabbi Loza ben Dudaya and why he's called Reb, why he's called Rebbe, we'll see at the end of the story. He had not left alone a single zoyna in the world that he hadn't had relations with. One time he heard of a certain zoyna in one of the cities near the sea. That she demanded as her fee a purse full of dinrim. Not a kis dinrim. So he took along a bag of dinrim, a huge amount of money, and he went and crossed seven rivers to get to her. Which the point is one of the Mefarshim, I think the Maharal says, you see from that he was that he put everything he had into it, his goof, his money, everything. As they were having relations, he and the Zayna, she passed gas. Omra, and she says after that, just as this gas that I passed never returns to its place, so also Allah ben Dudaya will never be accepted in tshuva. What? That's without the Reb, obviously, because he wasn't Reb at that point. Yeah. What did she mean by saying that? There's a number of different explanations, but one thing is the Yaris Dvash, Rabbi Yonasan Ibishit, says that she was trying to say, she was trying to convince him all the more to get involved in Avera. Look at this, she says to him, you have no future as far as Tshuva anyway, you may as well continue living it up in this world. But he took it to heart. Holach v'yosha ben shnei horamugvois. He went and sat between two mountains and hills. Omar, and he said, Omar, he says, Horumugvois bakshu alei rachmim. Mountains and hills beg for rachmim from me, from Hashem. Omrulai, and they answered him, no, ad sha'onimu bakshu malachon, bakash alachmenu. Never mind davening for you, we have to daven for ourselves. Now, Tosfos says that it means that it's not literally the mountains and hills speaking to him. It's he pictured to himself in his heart that this is what they would answer. If he says that, this is what they could be expected to answer. Another explanation, Tosfos says, is a sire, though the malach of the mountains was answered. Yeah. So, instead of davening for you, we have to daven for ourselves. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki yahorim yamushu v'agvois tumutena, that eventually the mountains will move, the hills will falter and then fall away. So therefore, in other words, we're not permanent things either. We have to daven for ourselves. Yeah. Omar, so he says, Shemaim va'oreth bakshu alei rachmim, heaven and earth, he pleads, daven ach for rachmonas from Hashem for me. Omru, and they also said, ad shonim uvakshim olach anuvakash alef menu, never mind davening for you, we have to daven for ourselves. Shenema, as the posuk says, I'll tell you soon, various explanations about what's going on over here. Shenema, as the posuk says, ki shamayim ka'oshim nimlochu va'oreth kebeged tivla, the heavens will disappear like smoke, and the earth will wear out like a garment.
What does that mean?
on the face of it, it's talking about in Mashiach times, because as we learned in Sanhedrin, there comes a point when Hashem renews, when Hashem recreates the world in a certain way. We talk about whether it be Pagashmias, Baruchnias, or whatever, but the point is, heaven and earth are not permanent, are not things that will exist for all time. They're subject to change. Omar says, the sun and moon daven for me. Omar lo, they also tell him, Ad shonim avakshim alach anavakash alachmenu, never mind davening for you, we have to daven for ourselves. Shenema, the pot is v'chofra alavana v'oshachama. The moon will be embarrassed, the sun will be ashamed. When Mashiach comes, in particular, that they were the objects of idol worship by the Goyim. Okay, they're not Re'acha. They're higher beings.
They didn't do anything wrong with the
book. Yeah. Omar, he says, stars and planets daven for Rachmanis for me. Omar Loi, and they say to him, never mind davening for you, we have to daven for ourselves. Shenem of a namaku called Tzvah Shemaim. As the passage says, all the hosts of heaven, the stars and planets, will rot away. Again, in other words, we're not permanent things either. What?
Namaku
literally means they'll rot away. The Chodesh mak means to rot away. Yeah. Omar, so then Elazar ben Nodaya says to himself, Ein adavar tolei elabi. In that case, it only depends on me. I'm the only one who can daven for myself then. Hiniach roshe ben birkov, he put his head between his...
But let me ask you a question. Yeah. Why Yachin? With the stars and I was gonna
leave it until we finish the story, but since you're asking, I may as well explain it now. I'll tell you there's a couple of interesting explanations that various Meforshim give. Marshall says so to start with, Marshall says, given that we said before, and given that we're in the middle of trying to figure out whether a person is able to do tshuva for such a thing and still survive. So Elazar ben Nodaya is trying to do that. He's trying to say, you know what, I want to do tshuva, but I don't want to die. I want to keep on living. So daven for me each of these things. He says to them, daven for me that I should keep on living. And each one of them tells him, you know what, none of us are permanent things either. The mountains and hills don't last forever. The earth and the sky don't last forever. So therefore, in other words, they're telling him, don't worry if you don't manage to survive the experience of tshuva, because... So what? Okay, life is a passing thing. Our life is also a passing thing, even if it's much longer than yours. So therefore, it's not something to be worried about. Focus on doing tshuva.
Focus on today.
Focus on what you need to accomplish. What? Okay, Yom Ha'ad, as long as humanity exists, the Shemayim exists.
This is exactly what the Golem is saying. And that's what we have. You know, it's just for today. We don't care about
it. No. What they're saying is right now you have an avodah to do with tshuva. Don't worry about what that tshuva is going to do to you, whether you might survive the attempt or not, because that's what you have to work on right now. The fact that you may not live through it is not your concern. That's how Marshall explains it. I'll tell you, there is, the Bogomilsky has in a couple of his Sephardim an interesting explanation, and actually the Yonason Ibishus has a somewhat similar explanation in one of his drushes. That what it is Elazar ben Nodaya is trying at first to excuse himself for his life vaderis by looking at the various things around him. Starts with the hills and he starts with the mountains and the hills representing his parents, like arguing, okay, well, they didn't raise me right, they raised me spoiled, etc. And the answer is no. That may be, but nevertheless, you're expected to be able to overcome that. You can't use that as an excuse. He tries to use the heaven and earth, meaning society around him, as an excuse. They led me the wrong way. He tries to use the sun and the moon representing the prosperity that I lived in, that I was surrounded in, and therefore that led me in the wrong way. He appeals then to the Techavim Mazolis, representing, okay, I was born under a bad fate or whatever, and therefore I was fated to do evil. And each thing he told him that no, don't expect us to ask Rachamim for you. We have our own problems. You have to ask Rachamim for yourself. And eventually he comes to that realization that I can't blame it on my parents. I can't blame it on society. I can't blame it on prosperity. I can't blame it on the mazel I was born under. It really does depend only on me to do tshuva.
And the Eibishter, why didn't they tell him? Why do you ask us? Ask the Eibishter. He's the one who's going to be... The
Bakshu Olei Rachman is saying, I want you to help me ask for Rachman from Hashem. Of course, who are they asking? They're asking Hashem. But in other words, he doesn't feel able. At first, he doesn't feel able to approach Hashem himself. Now, once he realizes, then he realizes, Ein Adavar Tolui Ela Bi. It only depends on me. I have to appeal to Hashem directly. He put his head between his knees, the gob of Chia, and then cried out and then screamed out in crying, until his neshama left him. Yotza Baskel, the Omra Baskel then came out and said, Reb Elazar ben Dodaya Mezuman L'chaya Olam Haba. Rabbi Elazar ben Dodaya is prepared, is immediately ready for the life of Olam Haba. But now, why is he's called Rebbe, as Gemara says in a couple of lines? Because he wasn't up until this point. He was a total Rasha. That's the point. But nevertheless, one point is, he now taught the entire world what it means, how a person goes about doing tshuva, how a person does the highest possible tshuva. And for that, he deserves to be called Rebbe.
And he never mentioned the name of Hashem.
When he davened, Hinyach Roshi ben Birka v'gal v'chiyah, he's crying out to Hashem. What do you want from him? He cried out to Hashem. The Gemara is not mentioning exactly what he cried out after that. The point is that he tried the various things to intercede, to appeal on his behalf. None of it worked out. So he realizes, I have to appeal directly to Hashem. I have to do tshuva between me and Hashem. And I'll tell you, in Tanya, it talks about that. Now, in Perek Mem Gimel of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about that. Usually, we have the kind of tshuva, the level that the laws of the Gaya reached is tshuva me'am. Now, normally, Ava of Hashem usually has to be preceded by Yira. Usually, a person works on Yira first and develops and does Torah and Mitzvah, and eventually from that they come to Ava of Hashem. Here, he kind of jumped. He jumped over all that. We don't find that he did Mitzvah during his life. But during his whole life, he was a Baal Avera. He jumped over all of that and went directly to Ava. So it's a very unusual thing. And in fact, in many Sfarim, in Sfarim from the Arizal and the Talmidim, it talks about, in many places in Siddur, it talks about that it was an emergency prescription, basically. It was a one-time thing that had to be done because who was Rebbe Elazar ben Dodaya? Who was he a Gilgal of? He was a Gilgal of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, the famous Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who was Kohen Gadol for 80 years and did an untold number of mitzvahs and then became a Tzaddiki, so he lost it all. So now, therefore, so now it had to be an emergency thing to raise up, to be able to redeem all the mitzvahs that he had accomplished in his first Gilgal. Therefore, he was given the ability to bypass the usual way of doing things and come directly to Ava. So he did. He had Ava of Hashem. He had a tremendous love for Hashem. So obviously, there's no question he talked to Hashem. The Gemara is not mentioning it because it's not important for us to know the exact words he used. The point is that he actually developed that love of Hashem that usually not even a great tzaddik would be able to reach necessarily. No, obviously he went someplace else. Obviously he's not with her anymore. Yeah.
What's the difference between that tshuva of Rebbe Elazar and the tshuva of Yira?
What about it? He went from Yira. He went from Yira. Got to do with it.
He also did a big tshuva.
Where do we find that he did a big tshuva? We find that Hashem tested him, and in a way he passed the test, in a way he didn't, as we learned in the Babastra. The spot of Lechata Belibay Chata, with his lips he didn't sin, with his heart he did, because he was questioning Hashem in his heart. We said that he said some psukim over there that speak negatively about Hashem, but Einonim Nitzvos V'Shach Tzare, a person is not held so much to account for what he says when he's in pain. So what kind of tshuva are you talking about that he did?
Didn't he do
tshuva
at the end?
No, not specifically. But anyway, by the way, the Maharal points out that his name is very appropriate to him. The name Jodaya in Aramaic means dregs, like a wine. El Ozer means Hashem helps. So therefore, it represents that even a person is at the dregs, is the lowest thing, but nevertheless, Hashem can still help him to do tshuva. Yeah. Okay. So now the question is, v'hahacha ba'avera hava umis. Now here, what he was addicted to, what he was into, was not minus, but aveda, minus, and we see that that he didn't survive his tshuva. So why are you telling me before that only minus is that tshuva when we see it's true as minus as well? The answer is hasam nami, yes, but in that case also, given to avik bar tshuva, since he was tremendously addicted to it, kiminus damya, in that sense, it's like minus, like his personal avodah zarah, sort of. It shaped his way of thinking and his way of doing so much that in that sense it was like minus. But for an ordinary person, like this woman before with her chista, who committed znus, it wasn't like she was totally addicted to it. It wasn't like it was her whole life. She did other avodahs as well, whereas with him, it was a single-minded thing of znus. Bacha Rebbe v'Omar. So now Rebbe cried when he heard the story v'Omar. Yesh koina olama v'kamashonim v'yesh koina olama v'sha'achas. That sometimes you have somebody who can acquire their world, the olam haba. It takes them many, many years. And then on the other hand, you have somebody like Rebbe Elazar ben Dodaya who can acquire it in one moment. So why is he crying about it? So we talked before when we had the story of Tia Bar Shalom a few blocks ago. That one idea of it is in that case, it makes it means that there's a much greater responsibility on tzaddikim. That if he was able to accomplish all that in one moment, then imagine how much a tzaddik works his whole life. He has to be working much harder than he is in order to be able to accomplish much more. So therefore, it puts tremendous responsibility on tzaddik. And there's also the idea that him himself, look how much he accomplished in one moment. If he had many years to accomplish it, he could have become so much greater even. I saw also an explanation on it, that Rebbe is saying, okay, we see from this story that no Jew is ever completely lost. Eventually, even the worst person, like a Lazar ben Dedaya, can become a Baal Teshuva. But how long does it have to be? How long are we going to have to mutchazich in galus among the goyim and among the oivra avera and whatever until you finally have that somebody manages to do that? And therefore he was crying about it. But Amar Rebbe, and Rebbe also...
Can you read that degree of tshuva and pardon from Hashem if you, let's say, you killed somebody or you...
I mean, if a person killed somebody, then there's no way to bring that person back alive. So in a certain sense, that's an aveira that can never be undone. But you have with that and with many other mitzvahs, you have the bein adam l'chaveira component. You have the bein adam l'makom component. The bein adam l'makom component, then Hashem can forgive the person for and clean it up. The bein adam l'chaveira, okay, the person's dead. There's no bringing them back alive again. And also Rebbe said, it's not enough that Baal Teshuva, that Hashem accepts them in Teshuva, Ela Shekori Nois and Rebbe. You see from this example that the Baal Teshuva can even reach the level where he's called Rebbe. Rebbe Elazar ben Dedaya. Again, because he taught us the deepest meaning of Teshuva. Yeah. Continues the Gemara, more on this topic of Avodah Zarah versus Minus. Rab Chanina and Rab Yonasan have a ta'azli ba'orcha. Rab Chanina and Rab Yonasan one time were traveling on the road. Motu lahanu treshvili. They reached a crossroads where there were two paths in different directions. Chad poti apischa d'aved sechavim. One passed by the door of a place of Avodah Zarah. V'chad poti apischa d'bei zonas. And the other one passed by a place, the entrance to a house of zonas. Which one should we take? Amalu lechad l'chad. So one of them says to the other... Yeah, it sounds like we're between a rock and a hard place. What do we do? Amalei chav l'chav, right? So one of them says to his colleague, Nezel apischa d'Avodah Zarah, better let's go on the path that passes by the place of Avodah Zarah, the Nochis Yitzre, because after all, the Avodah Zarah, the Yetzahara for Avodah Zarah has been shechted, as we know the famous story that the Anshe Knesset Gdola, this is long, the Anshe Knesset Gdola, at the beginning of the second Mesemesh, killed the Yetzahara for Avodah Zarah. Ever since then, there's not such a strong Yetzirah for it. So therefore, if we go on that way, we're less likely to get involved with Avodah Zarah than if we go on the path with the Zionists. Amalei Idach. The Gemara discusses over there, when the Gemara tells the story over there, we learned in Sanhedrin, we learned a few years back in Yuma, that they tried to, but then they found that it turned out that if you kill the Yetzirah for Zinus, then you kill the whole drive that a person has for procreation for Puri of Rivia in the first place. So therefore they blinded it, which makes it that a person not attracted to their relative in Sanhedrin and in Yuma, yeah. The other one says, no, just the opposite. Let's pass by the place where the Zonas are, the Nichbi Eli Yitzrin, and that way we will subjugate, we'll control our Yitzhara, the Nikabal Agra, and then we'll receive a reward from then we'll receive a greater reward from Hashem for that. And by the way, Tosfos says that we see from that therefore that means that when it comes to Avodah Zarah, you really have to stay as far away from it as possible. Because like this, otherwise, why are they saying that let's go in the way of the Zionists and control of Yetzirah or whatever? Why doesn't he just agree with the other one that, the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah is gone? That would be the safer thing. Obviously, the vote is you have to stay as far away as possible from Avodah Zarah.
Even after
the Yetzirah for it is taken away. It's interesting, by the way, we had a few blocks ago during the couple of days when I was away, we had a Mishnah that said over there, you have a city that has Avodah Zarah in it, you're not allowed to go into it. So Rashi had explained over there it meant when the city is celebrating a festival in honor of that Avodah Zarah. But the Rambam says, actually, in Pirush HaMishnayos, that no, what it literally means is if you have a city that has a Vodazara in it, you shouldn't be entering that city anytime. He says, practically speaking, nowadays, we live among the Goyim, we live in Golos. He says, it's like the Pasuk says, Avadam Shomalekim Masi Yedei Adam. You end up serving the Goyim who worship, you end up serving the idols in the sense that you serve and you're forced to live among the Goyim who worship these idols. So therefore, we have no choice. If we weren't allowed to go into a city with an idol, we'd never be allowed to go anywhere. But nevertheless,
there's a big difference between the cities that really, really worship Avodah Zarah, like the...
No. So that's the thing. According to the Rambam, the meaning of that Mishnah earlier is literally, if you have a city where you have a Avodah Zarah in it, you shouldn't be going into it. Nowadays, we have no choice, because if we did that, we wouldn't be able to live anywhere. But because any city we live in is going to have a Avodah Zarah, pretty much. But especially in the old days. But the point is that Tia was saying over here that you have to stay as far away as possible from Avodah Zarah. Yeah. Okay. What happened? Kimotu Hossam. So they did that. They walked on the path that passes by the place of the Zionists. When they came there, Chazinu LeZionist, they saw the Zionists, but Chazinu LeZionist Iskino Mikamayu. They saw that the Zionists were withdrawing because of them. Instead of standing outside and trying to proposition them or whatever, they saw the Zionists themselves, saw the Kedusha, and withdrew into their building. Amalei, Iskino, they humbled themselves. No, Meloshon Kana, Meloshon humbled themselves. They withdrew. So the one who had said we shouldn't go here, we should go instead next to the Avodah Zarah place, he says to the other Menolaha, where did you get such an idea that we should be able to trust yourself and come here and you weren't worried about the Yitzhara? Amalei, so he answers him because he had a pasuk that says, Mizima Tishmar Alecha Tivuna Tinsareka. The literal meaning of the pasuk mizima means an understanding, advice, the deep thought will guard over you. Yeah, so we'll see. One second. On the face of it, the word mizima means thought. Tishmar Alecha will guard over you. Tivuna, understanding, tinsareka will protect you. But Omrele Rabbanim LeRava, so the Chachamim Rava's Talmidim asked him, my Mizima, what does Mizima mean in this pasuk over here that you're saying that Mizima will guard over you? Ilema Torah, are you going to say the word Mizima over here refers to Torah? Why would we say that Mizima refers to Torah? Dichtiv ba Zima, because we have elsewhere, you have a pasuk elsewhere that uses the word Zima, in connection with Arayas, Umtagamin and Asas Chesin, and we translate it that the word Zima over there means an advice of or thought of Aveda. Now, since Torah is called Eitza, Torah is called Eitza, advice of Hashem to us. So therefore, in that sense, in connection with Arayas, Zima means bad advice, means advice of Arayas. But the word Zima itself, Rashi actually explains in a few places in Tanakh, that the word Zima itself is kind of a neutral term. It means advice, either it could be either good or bad. So you can argue, therefore, that the word Mizima means Torah, or see Hifli Eitzah Higdol Toshiyah, because you have a different concept where it says Hashem gave wonderful advice and made Toshiyah, which means the Torah, great. So therefore, we see that Eitzah refers to the Torah, and if Zima is a synonym of Eitzah, then you're going to argue that the word Mizima means Torah. The problem with that is Yachi Zima mi Barilei. Then why is the pasuk saying Mizima rather than Zima? The pasuk says Zima Tishmar Alacha. That Zima, meaning the advice of the Torah, will guard over you instead of Mizima. The answer is Hachikamar. No, because what the pasuk means is as follows: Midvar Zima Tishmar Alacha Torah Kimfareka. That the word Mizima is not part of the noun. The mem is like is a mem meaning from. From Zima, which Zima can mean Znus, as we just said, that Zima means Znus in the parasha of Arayat. From Zima, it will protect you. And what is it, meaning the Torah, will protect you, Kinsareka, and it will guard. So that is where we see, therefore, that Torah has the ability to protect the person from being attracted to Znus. And therefore, that's what we're saying over here. That's why he figured... That's why one of these common figures were better off going by the place of the Zionists over there, and the source of our Torah will protect them. And they were saying, give a Torah on the way, yeah. So Torah protects you from Znus, and that's how we...
From
not necessarily from Avodah Zarah, but Mizima, Tishmer Alecha. From Zima, it will guard over you, where Zima can mean Znus, yeah. Okay.
What was your Zohar protects or mitzvah protects at the time you deliver your mitzvah?
So we want to discuss that in Soter. You have the difference between Torah and mitzvahs in that regard. The Torah protects you whether right now when you're oisik in it and also not, and also when you're not, whereas mitzvahs only when you're oisik in them. Marsha points out over here, you have a different Gemara elsewhere where Abaya was, where in fact it says that you have a story over there involving Abaya, you have a story in Sukkah where it ends up saying that the greater a person, the greater his Yetzirah. So that's what Marsha says, that therefore it must be in our case over here, as you just said, they must have actually been learning Torah at the time, not just that in the past they've learned Torah and it'll protect them, but rather that right now they're learning Torah as they're walking by this place of the Zionists, and therefore they knew that it'll, and therefore he knew that it'll protect them.
Not their knowledge of Torah.
Not their knowledge of Torah, but the fact that they're doing it right now, yeah. Well, anybody who was Oisik in it constantly, I guess, yeah.